Welcome to this very special edition of the Team Wales podcast, in partnership with Speakeasy Club and hosted by me, Simon Clark. In this series, we're joined by Team Wales partners and some very special guests for an open and honest conversation about mental health in business, sport and life. Together, we'll explore how these organisations support their teams, the reasons behind their commitment to mental well-being, and how to navigate those tough but essential conversations that we all have on a day-to-day basis. Launched in honour of World Mental Health Day, this series shines a light on the importance of creating a supportive and mentally healthy workplace. Stay tuned for powerful insights and meaningful conversations. I think you're all really going to enjoy this series. In this first episode, we speak to Susie Drain. Susie is the chair of the Athletes Commission for Team Wales. She's got over 100 caps for Welsh netball. She's an educator. She's a tutor. She's a bit of a legend. And she was so, so generous with her time before heading out on official Team Wales duties to Kenya. I picked up an awful lot of stuff from chatting to Susie. There were so many things I thought I'd researched enough about but hadn't. And to hear some of the nuggets that her friends and former colleagues shared about her as well was kind of a really good indication as to why she's a brilliant chair of the Athletes Commission. So can't wait to share this episode with you. Enjoy, and we look forward to hearing your feedback afterwards. Susie, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Really appreciate it. Busy week teaching, and then you're off on a little adventure next week. So thank you for your time.
No problem at all.
So before we get into it, we've had a little chat offline just around what this is, looking at mental health in the very simplistic subject. But ultimately, from your perspective, I'm really interested in that athlete and then the transition and sitting on kind of the outside a little bit. But before we get into that, can you just talk us through a bit of your background and a bit of your role with Team Wales now?
Yeah, so my background is I'm a netballer, but in terms of sport, and I played internationally for 18 years, and not including the age groups that I came through. Also, I work at Cardiff Met as a lecturer and have been since 2012, so a long time. I know I don't look that old, but I came here for my academic experience and to do my undergrad, and did my postgrad here whilst working in industry, and never really left. Now I'm, you know, in the job of helping other students navigate their early careers.
Fascinating. You talk there about not looking older, if you don't, by the way. But also, you kind of came into Cardiff Met quite early, didn't you? You didn't necessarily come in at the traditional age. Is that right? Did I hear that right?
Yeah, you're right. Is that one of Ria's top tip? No.
Might be.
Sneaky secrets. No, I actually used that as a talking point for some of the students. I came in a year young, so I was 17. Not because, you know, I think there's an assumption there that I moved up a year in school and I must be super clever. It's not that. Anyone who would know me knows it's not that. I actually moved from Wales to England when I was in primary school and missed a year then. So I went through secondary school kind of the same, you know, I did all of my secondary school in, but I ended up being, just 17, and relied on a lot of support when I came down here, because I think, you know, when you come to uni as a 17-year-old, I mean, when you come to uni as an 18-year-old, it's eye-opening. So I was really fortunate to have had some mental health support when I came down. I distinctly remember a conversation with a couple of people in Freshers Week, as it was then. Are you burning the candle at both ends? We can't, you know, are you enjoying yourself? I wasn't. I was homesick. And yeah, but I know that we'll get into that. But yeah, I've been very fortunate, I suppose, to right from the off, really, down here, having support from multiple places to help me.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I want to know a little bit more about that as we go along, and also that support as well, that family support and the wider circle, is it for you personally, but then also what you're kind of able to offer the students now. But just before we get into kind of the mental health bit, just
Can you give us a bit of a potted history around your netball career as well? Because it's pretty incredible. Formidable centre court was the phrase I heard from someone. Again, I can't reveal my sources, but that's very much where we are. So can you just share a little bit about that, and that'll bring us up to kind of modern day then?
Yeah, I think it's always nice actually to be able to share the journey that I've had, because I think a lot of people will see me and others at the top of our career. So we always see us when we're, you know, we're playing really well or we've made it, and, you know, you stay there. And actually, the reality is every athlete will have periods of time where they, you know, they haven't performed, or they've been unsuccessful. So I was really fortunate. I kind of got picked up by a Wales netball scout, as it was, when I was playing up in Chester. I was from, kind of got involved with the youth setup and played for a few years, played at the World Youth Championships. And I mean, that was in Miami. So it was a great first experience, and it made me want to keep involved for sure.
I mean, Chester's lovely, but you know, it's not quite Miami, is it?
Yes, definitely. But then after that, that was actually the year that I was making decisions on coming to uni. And I suppose one of my first points that I tell people is I applied to be at uni down at UWIC, as it was then. I actually got rejected because of my age, because, you know, there was policies in place then that wouldn't allow people who were of a certain age this uni, which, you know, had to respect that. And that was my first kind of, you know, things don't always go swimmingly. As it happens, I was really fortunate then. I learned afterwards that Julia Longville had put in a good word for me, and I was training with the national squad at that point. So it kind of made sense, me coming down to Cardiff, because I was here most weekends training. Came down, got my first cap at the end of my first year. And, you know, that was reward, I suppose. But also it was hard work, because being at uni in the first year takes a lot of balance. And people helped me to get that balance of work, of performing, and then also of my social life too. So got my first cap at the end of my first year. And then actually the year after that, I wasn't then selected for the squad that went to the World Cup. So again, that's a point that people probably don't remember, because it was a while ago. It was 2007, but people won't have necessarily seen. And from that point on, I suppose there had to be a decision for me at that point. And I distinctly remember driving north at the time to get back to my space, to my people, if you like, my family, and thinking, either you take that and you're done, or I'm going to show you. And I'm going to show you what I've got. So I think that made me, you know, a stronger player, but also a better person. And the person I am, that started to be the making. Came back in the year after and got selected again into the squad. And then have been in ever since, really. Got my 100th cap in 2019, which was just before COVID. And then the next big challenge, or one of the next big challenges, came in COVID. I'd made the decision to step out of Celtic Dragons, which I'd been playing since the end of my first year in uni, and because I just needed a little bit of a break. I needed time for me. And when you're training 6.5 days a week or playing, it's just really difficult to, you know, to have a balance with your career and what you want to achieve there. Also a family, or my family, and actually seeing them. I used to go kind of like it was a bit of a running joke, January to July, I wouldn't go back north, because we never got time. So I was able to do that. And I had the best 2 years. I played over at Bath Toucans. Loved it, and had a load of support from Wales Netball to be able to do that. Also maintain a position in the national squad, and spoke to the coach then, Sarah Moore, you know, and the conversation was proactive. It was regular, and really helped me then to, you know, up until I decided that actually it was going to be the point where I wanted to finish playing. And I think when I say finish playing, I retired from playing, I didn't retire from netball. So I'm still very much involved. And I think, I suppose that's what I feel really passionate about for, you know, our job with the Athlete Commission, is to make sure that we remember that we're people first. Yeah, we give a lot to our sports, but we've still got a lot to give, even though if it's not in a playing role, it could be something else, you know, that's just as important. So I suppose key messages for me are trying to say to governing bodies, don't forget the person, and they could give back, continue to give back to the sport as well. That has given, for me, netball has given me so much, and I want to keep giving, if they'll keep taking from me as well.
Yeah, I absolutely know. And it's lovely. I'm one of those weird people that loves listening to people tell their kind of journeys and stories, because it isn't simple, it isn't linear. But then there's that smile and glint in your eye when you're talking about all those little bits that make it up. And to get 100 caps for your country as well in anything is incredible. But in something that you love and are really passionate about, it's just an astonishing achievement. I want to come back to that, the Athletes Commission bit and person-centred, just in a sec. But you talked about kind of not getting the chance to go home that much, but then talked about that decision where you were going home to your people, your family. So clearly they're such an important family unit for you. Who were those people that you were kind of leaning on maybe when you weren't able to get back to your family? Did you have a bit of a network down south?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, without, they know that, hopefully. I'm one of those people, I think sometimes they get embarrassed, because I will try and tell them that I'm really thankful. You know, I do love them to bits, and they are my chosen family, if you like. And they, you know, I am very kind of family orientated. So I've got a very close circle of friends, and I'm fortunate to have a couple of different friends in different environments. But uni, I had a group that we're tight now. There's eight of us. I've also got a couple of very close friends from within uni, but not my uni experience, in terms of my classmates, and they've been influential in, you know, the helping me to navigate the journey that isn't always, like you say, linear, isn't always positive, but has been the making of me. And I think I'm definitely an optimist, and I'm one of those people that like to look at things positively, even when they're not easy, the scenarios that, you know, and illnesses in the family, not being selected, didn't get a job. And actually, for their support, it's massively helped me to kind of be like, okay, go again. We learn from that. We go to the next, you know, opportunity. Once one door closes, the other opens. There's another that will open. You just have got to knock on the right ones.
There's clearly a lot of resilience there as well. Is that a big family thing? Is that just something you've always feel like you've had, or have you consciously picked up on that through those challenging times?
I think that I have been fortunate, because when something has knocked me down, I've probably had or made it a bit of a challenge for me to, I will get back into that squad. It's not always in my control. So like I said, I had a very close family member who was sick, and not totally not in my control, but it's kind of, I've just got that outlook that you're dealt a pathway, and actually sometimes it's about what you make of it. Life is too short, you've got to live in be in the present, and also make the most of your, like I always call them my people, my team. I always say to be hi team. In fact, I wrote on our WhatsApp group this morning, hi team. I thought, hi gang. And I also am very open to say I don't need any more in my gang. Like, I've got people that, you know, they look after me. They've got my back. I trust them. They'll be there for me. I know that. I know that sounds almost, I suppose, a bit kind of like, oh, she's telling people I don't need them. You know, I suppose, though, what's important for me to mention are the friendships that I've made through netball, because they're also part of my kind of gang. And since retiring, I've, you know, had a couple of conversations with people to try and support them in their retirement from playing, saying that actually you go from perhaps having teammates that are maybe 12 or 20 of you. You might only keep in contact with four or five, but they're the ones that you're going to keep in contact with probably for the next good few years anyway. because they're your friends, they're not just your teammates. So yeah, I suppose that's where I've been fortunate to I can surround myself with a similar type of people that would, you know, they're loyal and that they'd also keep my feet on the ground when I need it.
I'm interested in getting more into that. If that's the that's certainly come from somewhere, but that leads me on to the really simple question I wanted to kind of ask you, because there's two things you mentioned there I thought were really interesting. One is around, look, I don't need any more pals, let's be honest. And in the nicest way, but yeah. I think that's really, really nice. That's lovely, because we don't put those boundaries in place. Sometimes we kind of say yes to an awful lot, and it's not that we're against other people or don't need other people. It's just actually I've got this group here that really fill my cup, or they're just great people for me. So yeah. It's not an against thing. It's just really, really, really for something over here.
Yeah.
And that sounds really positive. And the other bit is celebrating and telling them.
Yeah.
You know, men, we're useless at that. We just don't do it. But that is such a great thing to hear, that, you know, and I'm on this bit of a mission. It leads me into the next question to you, really, that those are the sorts of things that can really help your mental health. Mm. They're the sorts of things that can really support you and bring you up when you're down. So really simple question I'm going to ask now is, what does mental health mean to you?
So I think I have kind of thought about this, obviously, in prep for the podcast and our chat. Connection, you know, people, striking a balance, achieving, and it could be anything. So, yeah, achieving what you want to out of life. And that could be having a great group of people around you. Maybe it's having, you know, a close-knit family. Perhaps it's something career-wise, good friends that you can trust and confide in when you need to. But connection is probably, if I was to think of a word, connection is key for me, and balance.
Yeah, totally agree with that. That like-minded people and feeling part of something is something that just we I don't think we take for granted. Sorry, we do take for granted sometimes. So yeah, I'm really like that. There's also that piece, and I'm interested in your thoughts on this, because you've mentioned something already around, you know, you haven't retired from netball.
Yeah.
You know, you just retired from playing. And I'm interested in that transition you've talked about now. You're lecturing with Cardiff Met. What was that kind of transition like from playing netball to then being in the kind of educator space?
Yeah.
But, you know, did you have a challenge with that identity, or was that something you'd always kind of planned for?
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's probably important for me to acknowledge that I am aware that, and people have said to me, you had a fairy tale retirement from playing. I will acknowledge that. I know that very, very few people get to necessarily, you know, have that experience. Sometimes it's career ending injury, or it's not being selected for something. So I know I'm fortunate in that sense. But I suppose what people didn't necessarily see was that there was a lot of proactive communication that went in before that, you know, talking to the management at Wales Netball, and then looking at timelines, making decisions not just for me but for the team as well, was important. And it, you know, that again, that came up in a conversation that I had, and with my family as well, because, you know, I think over COVID, there was a group of players who weren't involved with Super League, so they weren't training. And, you know, I fought for that player group to make sure we had I represented that player group to make sure we had a return to play protocol. It was, you know, well worked with Wales Netball. It was great. And it came to going back, and I thought, I don't even know if I want to. But actually, having gone back in, I wanted it even more. I wanted to be in that environment, wanted to be with people. But probably from then is when I started those conversations of, and, you know, this is what I'm looking to try and do, I think. And those conversations at the same time were no, I didn't expect to be, or there was no expectation for me. I had to be named. It was, I would only be named if I deserved the place. I was selected. It wasn't because, well, she's done whatever previous. If I was able to be competitive and I felt like I was able to give what I, you know, the team needed, then I was in with a shout of being selected for the group. But I think those conversations then were regular. And then, you know, we identified a point then that was right for me to finish playing. Now, I'd already been teaching for 10 years at Cardiff Met. So because netball was not professional, there was probably less for me than I know some of my friends who netball was or has been everything for them. And, you know, I distinctly remember one of my good friends and other middies, you know, also kind of saying to me, you know, how are you going to deal with this and how she was dealing with it. And having a full-time job at the same time, I had to focus on that. So it wasn't my main focus because I think that perspective had been given to me earlier on in my career that, you know, my career was, in terms of netball career, my work career was really important. So I'd actually already started having the discussions about doing a doctorate. So it was something that I wanted to study more. And actually that had been on hold since I finished my master's in 2011. So I actually signed up, because of the time, I couldn't give it the time that it needed and because I wanted to invest that time in netball. So I actually signed up for that in 21. So I was already a year into it. And I remember actually I did the presentation the day before we played the two South Africa tests before going to Com Games in 22. That helped me with, I had that on the Monday. I was already jubilant because my other half had proposed. So that week was just massive. I then became the most, I think, was that the most capped netballer. And that whole week was just a bit of a blur, to be honest. And then we went to Com Games after that. I did giggle and say to him, "You only did that just because we were away from each other for 4 weeks now. So just in case," I said, "no," but that was never going to happen because we waited 10 years. But so I think that transition, in a long-winded way, was made easier because I was in Cardiff Met already. I was doing that. I'd already taken steps to looking at what next for me and what's the challenge. And that doctorate is actually working with netball as well. So, you know, again, that's probably where I come from when I say, you know, athlete or people still have, I retired from an athlete role or player role. I didn't retire from netball. So I'm still giving into the sport, I think. And others, it won't be a doctorate, but it could be something else that they want to be involved with in that sport. It could be coaching. It might be officiating or whatever that looks like, or managing events, you know.
I mean, we've known each other a long time now. It's coming up to 23 minutes. And I've picked up that clearly you are so passionate and focused on other people. Yeah. And other people are so important in their roles as well, in their different ways. It means an awful lot, you know, listening to you there talking about, yeah, you make a decision for you in terms of retirement and next steps. But you said in the same breath, you've got to do the right thing for the team. And it doesn't feel, I haven't got an elite sport background, but it doesn't feel that's always necessarily at the front of people's minds, but that's clearly come across to you. And I could probably answer this question myself, but I'm just interested, as chair now of the Athletes Commission, kind of how important is that post-athlete care, really? You know, we could specifically talk about mental health, but ultimately it all kind of sits in the same space. How important is it for you now to kind of look after people in that sense?
Massive. And, you know, it's something that I've spoken to our athlete commission about. And what's been amazing for me, I suppose, is my eyes have been opened by working on the athlete, or as part of the athlete commission, with other amazing athletes. And they have amazing networks as well. But the reality, three of us had a conversation. We've all, I suppose, in recent years, retired. And we all said the same thing. I suppose the challenge is, what next? And with some people, it will be, that was my identity. Who am I now? I remember actually saying to my in my doctorate presentation, one of the challenges that I will have is people know me as Susie Drain, the netballer, but I want them to know me as Susie Drain. And as the person, as an academic, as a netballer, as a good friend, you know, as a so that's what they were saying to me as well. So it's not just me. We've been able to, as a group, we've been able to share things from across sports. So it's not just netball. You know, it happens in, I won't say the sport because otherwise you'll know the people and they haven't given me permission to speak about it, but in multiple sports. And I have no doubt it's in all sports people. You know, what is the next phase for them? What's the next challenge? It's really important that governing bodies address that with their athletes, their people. And, you know, they are people first. I actually think, you know, and I've said this to Team Wales and spoken with Rebecca, and said, we've got to make sure that national governing bodies know the role that they play and helping and supporting that transition out of playing, of competing, of performer. Because for some people, the decision is made for them. Some people will have to have help and support with that, because that journey, that transition will not be as fluent as perhaps mine has been. And again, I've been very fortunate because I've had that support from Wales Netball, but also from Cardiff Met. You know, bluntly, the governing bodies have a duty to do that as well, because the athletes have given their sport a lot in terms of training, in terms of promotion, role models, and they have to be looked after they have finished doing that performer job. Now, again, that could be just helping understand what's next for us, or the support that's available and guiding them to that support. It doesn't need to be taking it all on themselves. But that's something that we've said as part of the Athlete Commission, that we're going to hopefully talk to national governing bodies about. And we are looking at an athlete space on the new Team Wales website, which hopefully will help current or future athletes and previous athletes as well, so our alumni, to kind of think, oh, you know, there's a space, this is a link, I can go and have a look at some of the resources that might be available to me, so that we're not afraid of having the conversations they had nice and early, and it doesn't just become as a bit of an end point and, oh my goodness, what next? You know, there's preparation into that when the athlete wants to start thinking about, and it could be way off, let's not make these conversations difficult, let's make them a natural conversation with people to start to think about early, so it isn't so daunting when perhaps that comes and, you know, we didn't foresee it coming, or maybe it was planned as well.
Absolutely. And I guess that I'm trying to find the right phraseology really now, and I'm still trying to think of the phraseology of it really, but you had that kind of foresight and the other string to your bow, and it's not necessary to say that many athletes don't have the foresight, but look, let's be honest, you're competing at elite level in whatever sport, you're told you're exceptional at something, and that's really cool, like that's wicked. The money might not be the best, and in most cases it's not, if it's there at all. So there is that element of, I know you want this to last forever, it isn't going to last forever. So looking now in with your kind of Cardiff Met hat on, what are some of those messages, or how do you go about communicating what that looks like with students and just kind of having one eye on the future as well?
Yeah, I think, you know, what Cardiff Met can definitely boast here, and I would be a real advocate of, and you know, talking to people, especially on open days, and people who are coming here for the sport, is we have a great dual career athlete program. We've got, and there's proof in the success of that with many of the sports persons that have come through here and are now have represented or now representing in their sports across the world. And we see that it's pretty amazing when you go to Commonwealth Games for me, but I mean, I know the this year's Summer Olympics, where we see how many people have come through the uni, but that, you know, that's not just by coincidence, that's by helping those athletes, those people and athletes, to understand balance. Academia is really important, because what is it you want to do post that really short window of time that you've got in your life? You might be exceptional at the skill that you've got, you know, and use that skill that you've got. And what else is out there? So students giggle at me. I think they definitely think I'm firm. I like to think I'm fair. You know, I recently talked to the new intake about organisation skills, time management, you know, making time to balance their academia they come here and they love sport. It's really, and physical activity, it's really good for all of us because, you know, it gets us out, gets us moving, helps with our health, social, physical and mental. But equally, we then have to do our work. And then, you know, we have to have time for ourselves as well, whatever that looks like. So balance is key. And being present is also key. So I suppose they're the key messages that I kind of look at and think, you know, sport, I get so much from teamwork, being an independent performer as well, and saying to students to bring all of those experiences and then put them into employment, but make sure they get a balance, because if one element of life, and obviously at university there's always a risk of either sport or social overtipping academia. I think they think I'm a dragon as well, you know, when I say this, but it's lived experience. I wasn't the angel that people perhaps might think, in terms of I had to get it wrong to get it right, and that balance. I had support, so now it's my time to give that support to the next, you know, crop of people that are coming through to hopefully make them better people.
Yeah, 100%. And I think those, there's a lot of practical skills there that definitely people need. And I think that vulnerability that you've talked about, and the authenticity, you know, having got it wrong, you know, people, that's why people buy into you. It's not a reason they might do. They 100% do, both in and out of the lecture room. I think that's really important to kind of acknowledge. Just, I want to delve a little bit deeper though, just on, you've talked about it a lot around connection, community, like-minded people, looking after your pals. That kind of feeling is second to none, in my opinion. What are some of those skills that you think are so important? Some of those soft skills, maybe, that perhaps we don't get taught, but some of the ones that really help look after people when they need it, or perhaps where we can be a little bit kinder to ourselves if necessary.
So, like, do you mean like being communicative and caring, and is that what we're thinking?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm a big one on empathy. A big one on, you know, standing in someone else's shoes but keeping your own socks on.
I think
I'd love to claim that as mine. It's not. I've heard it somewhere, but I don't know, I can't remember where it was, but those are some of the things for me about just listening and just sitting there in a non-judgmental space.
Yeah.
Going, I haven't got the answers either, but let's sit here and work together, whether that's with a student, it's with a pal, it's with a former teammate, whatever.
So actually, I suppose you're helping me to write my, I know I'm going away next week for a couple of days, but I've actually got to write a presentation on my second module of my doctorate. And we're talking about, you know, what skill development have I had? And I totally agree with you in terms of being able to listen. It, like, communication, I think a big one we all think is talking, verbal, non-verbal, and listening is invaluable. Like exactly like you just said about not judging people, because everyone has had, there's always something going on in the background that we might not know about, that we can't make judgments about because we don't know. And actually just trying to support people where we need. So in particular with students, they've got loads going on and we don't necessarily want to open up to us, which is, you know, completely their decision. What I suppose your friendships do, what your friends do and your people, is you can absolutely just roll out everything to them. They'll listen. They'll be that blanket there for you, that protection, if you like, to do that and then pick you back up. And I think in uni, when the skills that we need as personal tutors, especially for the new first years, is some of that. So it's not being judgmental, because we know, and I will say all the time, you will make mistakes. You will fail assessments at some point, as long as it's not three times in a row. Learn the lessons. But, you know, you have to make errors in life to learn and navigate your way through. And I don't know anyone that's had a journey that's been positive all of the time or made no mistake. I mean, introduce me to that human being. I don't believe that, you know, that would be the case. I suppose, yeah, communication is really, really important. Care. And I think, you know, people forget that as As lecturers, we care. We care, absolutely. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in this job. For the young adults that are trying to find their way and that they're coming out of education for the first time and away from home, perhaps some of them for the first time, trying to find out about themselves, like who they are. And I don't mean just in an academic sense of what they want to do and what roles they want to be in. Some of them are navigating different, you know, who they are in life. Who do they want to be and who, you know, they can actually do that a little bit more in uni. It's not necessarily easy for them either. So we've got to be that support, that non-judgmental support, the person who listens, doesn't make any judgment, doesn't necessarily tell them the answers, but encourages them to seek guidance, you know, make decisions for themselves.
Your face softened lovely then when you said care. It just quite clearly conveyed that is such a big thing for you. Going on the last sort of half an hour, everything is about other people, person-centered. Yeah, you'll challenge. Yes, there's positive challenge, but at the end of the day, you know, people before anything else, whether that's the student or sports person or whoever. So yeah, that was amazing to listen to. I've got 152 other questions to ask you around that. I won't, I promise, but I do have one more. And I think I could probably work this out actually, because you've almost touched on it already. And I know you've had sight of this leading up to it, but one of the things I love to ask people and find out about is where's their clubhouse? So where's that safe space for you, that place, again, non-judgmental, you can be you. I'm actually in the minority because my clubhouse is my local rugby club. So it is bricks and mortar. It is a physical place. But the more I've asked this question to people, the more and more I've become in the minority, which is brilliant. So Susie Drain, I will ask you, where is your clubhouse?
Yeah, I did have sight of this question and it was what's a clubhouse? But automatically, I think being surrounded by my people, and that doesn't, to me, it doesn't matter. You know, I was supposed to be in Amsterdam last weekend, but it didn't happen. But wherever those people are, for me, it's not bricks and mortar. It's the people that know me, that can tell if there's something that she's not quite herself, you know, and it might just be kind of over the phone, all okay. It could be going for a walk, a jog. I call it a plod these days because it's no quicker. It's not quick enough for a run. Let's go. Let's just move. I think my best friend and I, that's what we did. You know, if it was 6:30 in the morning, just because she might be able to sense, oh, she needs to just outlay something. She's halfway across the world at the moment doing some coaching, which I'm super proud of her for. But actually, you know, we're keeping in touch with each other, and we can sense when you just need, you know, your people. You sense when you just need someone or something from them, and that could just be an emoji, it could be I'm here with an ear or whatever that looks like. So yeah, my clubhouse is probably just being surrounded by the people that I want to be surrounded with. So the group of netball people, you know, that I'm very fortunate to have had and met along the way, my uni mates or my family. Yeah, my family is everything to me. And I have actually been very fortunate in the last couple of years that they've moved down to Cardiff because they've needed support as well. My sister has got Down syndrome and autism, so want to be able to help a little bit more. And I know that she actually went to walking netball on Tuesday, which for me is massive. She's followed me around the world and never really had the opportunity to get stuck into netball. Yeah, she went to a session on Tuesday and I had a meeting which I couldn't get out of, but she loved it and the people there were amazing. So I think she wants to go back, but she has said to me she's a better shooter than me, so she wants to show me how it's done. So yeah,
brilliant.
I can't go this Tuesday, but the Tuesday after I think I'll be there.
Amazing. Again, just the smile on your face talking about that's absolutely what it's all about. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. And again, I'm going to pester you separately, I think, to ask a few more things that I haven't been able to pick up on. But is there anything else that you wanted to kind of share or land on any particular topic?
Just, you know, if, What I do think is, whilst I've been saying, you know, communication is key, it's absolutely two-way communication. I think what we all have a responsibility to do is be proactive, whether that's supporting someone else or seeking support as well. You know, it can't be all one way, otherwise it just doesn't work. In an athlete space, it's going out and perhaps trying to find where you can get support, or opening up to a management. And that's what I mean by, let's not make these conversations difficult. If we need support, then we should be able to ask for it and you know, not be judged. Equally, that support should be forthcoming too. And that's what good friends usually do. They give, but they, you know, they also receive as well. So in all walks of life, that is a very much a two-way communication.
Brilliant place to finish. Yeah, totally agree with that. Susie, thank you so much for your time. Good luck next week, and we'll hopefully speak to you soon.
No worries. Thanks.
So we hope you enjoyed that first episode. I loved sitting down with Susie. I thought the authenticity, the credibility, both on and off the court, and now in a higher education setting, I think it's really clear why she's got such respect from colleagues, past and present. There's lots and lots to take away there, and I hope some of those things kind of landed with you, and I'm sure there were some really relatable bits there as well. Clearly, there's a critical role for mental health in business, sport, and everyday life. And I think some of the things Susie talked about there really hit home about how that impacts teams, students, individuals, family life. And there is a continuous ongoing commitment there as well. Look, navigating these difficult conversations is never easy, but it's essential for creating a supportive environment, I think. We all have this responsibility to fill our toolbox up with the skills to help us and to help those around us as well. I think that's something sometimes that gets forgotten. On the back of this episode, if there's anything you've been affected by, please do visit our website. Free resources, free guidance, free phone numbers that can help you to kind of just understand things a little bit more, help you understand that you're not on your own. And there's also some specialist organisations out there who may be able to support you with any particular areas that you want to be curious about. Keep a lookout for the Team Wales Business Club, and there's some exciting Commonwealth Games related news coming up before the end of the year. Let's continue these conversations. Let's commit to a culture of care in every workplace. And we'll see you next time for this very special edition of the Team Wales podcast.